Hello, and welcome to the Chain Restaurant Total Rewards Association, CERTRA for short, podcast. CERTRA's podcast series focuses on employee total rewards, compensation, benefits, and restaurant industry relevant topics. For those of you who don't know who CERTRA is, we are a nonprofit professional organization dedicated to strengthening and enhancing total rewards within the restaurant industry. Total rewards encompasses employee compensation, benefits, paid time off like vacation, sick time, holidays, and work-life balance, things like flex time, telecommuting, part-time managers, and community service. Our goal as an organization is to educate and train representatives of our membership to provide networking opportunities in our restaurant industry and to broaden total rewards information available to restaurant industry professionals. CERTRA was established in 1976. So to say we've been at this for a while is true. And we have close to 100 chain restaurant member companies with even more covered concepts. To find out more about becoming a CERTRA member, check us out at crtraweb.org. My name is Jess Williams, and I'm the new CERTRA Education Director. This is my first role serving on the board, and I'm thrilled to be hosting my first podcast featuring a fellow board member, Asia Davis, who is the current Vice President and Treasurer. Asia is the manager of retail compensation for Starbucks, managing pay for over 200,000 people. With prior experience in compensation consulting, Asia transitioned into the restaurant industry in 2016 and hasn't looked back. Keeping the restaurant employees at the forefront, her analytical skills and passion for people provide the perfect foundation to deliver great pay programs. She has a bachelor in mathematics and statistics from Virginia State University and has been a member of CERTRA since 2016. She is also an active member of World at Work. Welcome, Asia.
Thanks. So glad that, good to be here, Jess. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I've got a number of questions that we have heard from our members, and I thought we would go ahead and kick off this compensation 101, understanding why compensation is so important and specifically why data is important to use. So if you would, share with us what your thoughts are.
Yeah. So as you kind of mentioned in my introduction, I came into the space of retail slash food at a very interesting time. So at the beginning of 2016, and it's right on the heels of the beginning of the Race to 15 movement, right? That was when we had our first states and localities starting to implement or pass their local minimum wage ordinances. And so when I came in, it was new to everyone and it was a hailstorm, right? It started off with just one or two, and then next thing you know, there were tens or 20 new ordinances or continuing ordinances being added every year. And since then, obviously, we have been in an unprecedented time with the pandemic. And it has done something to wages that has never before happened, right? And so, you know, as much as I consider myself an expert, I've never seen this before. No one's really prepared for it, right? And so you have to, I say the primary focus is to take a stance as an organization, commit to a compensation philosophy and execute. The worst thing that you can do is just fly by the seat of your pants, right? This is what this other company is doing, so we're just going to do it too. And so part of that and getting the information that I feel is important to have in order to make that decision is data. What has historically happened? What has historically happened in locations that have had really aggressive minimum wage versus those that have not? What are we seeing right now in the streets? So the pandemic has been going on for a long time now, almost 2 years. And so we have had lots of surveys, lots of data being collected about what are we experiencing in this field as well as other, other unskilled fields, right? What are the challenges that are being faced? What are companies doing? Just to get an understanding of, is this something that's like transitory? Or is this something that's permanent? So once you kind of establish that you know, with your various data sources, then it's time to figure out, what are you going to do? What is the writing on the wall, and what, not only from a financial perspective, but from a strategic perspective, are you and your leadership willing to do to continue to be competitive in a landscape that we have right now? I can guarantee you this is not short term. To answer my question earlier, it's not short term. It is the fire that I think many people such as myself, who have been strong advocates of frontline workers, have been waiting for, right? I've been preaching for years about wages, and usually no one wants to hear it. It's like, hey, how can we become more efficient? How can we make more profit? And that's been the focus, as it should be for a company. However, I think now everyone's kind of coming together that's in this space, and it's even more important now for us to focus on our strategy. Once you've defined, like, hey, this is how I want to position myself in the market, we want to be the most competitive, or we want to be very competitive, or we want to be somewhat competitive, then it's defining what does that mean in numbers. That's where survey data comes in. So, you know, you have no idea what people are paying unless you have numbers you can point to. Unfortunately, in our industry, our survey sources are somewhat limited. When it comes to corporate positions, so like HR, finance, IT, there is a plethora of sources out there that you can get information for. However, when it comes to our operations-based roles, so your cafe members, your workers, your shift supervisors, your general managers, there's a lot less data available. Then there's the challenge of, hey, I'm in food, right? What about those in retail, right? What about those at Walmart, Costco, Amazon? Their wages are a lot higher, right, than our wages in restaurants. And that's identified in any survey data that you can look at. So then there's the challenge of, who do we want to compete with? Are we just going to compare our wages to other restaurants? Or are we going to compare our wages to all of our competitors, which would include retail partners? And so some in the industry have chosen to say, hey, we're going to keep pace with retail because we know that that is where our talent is going and that is where our talent is coming from. So asking that question is extremely important because, again, we understand that there's a fiscal responsibility, but if you can't keep your doors open, right, you can't make money. So it's finding that balance of, you know, what is the tolerance that we have as an organization versus what do we need to do from a business perspective to ensure we can keep the doors open, operating, and employees happy. So that's kind of like the overview I can give you of not only the challenges that face, but also, you know, why it's important. When it comes to the restaurant industry, there's really no other surveys other than Zertra. I have been looking for a long time, trying to find reputable data for restaurant specific jobs. And like I said, you have a few for retail, like Mercer has one, Aon has one. But they rarely, if any, include any restaurant positions. So your searcher is your go-to. I mean, it's a shameless plug, but it's the truth. Like, that's where you're going to get your data.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. And I can say, as a current member and user of the data, coming from outside the industry myself, I have certainly come to appreciate just how challenging it is to get data specifically for restaurant. And I think you touched on a couple of key aspects of the challenges there, which are, you know, roles that are specific to our industry also are the, you know, competitors for talent are very diverse. You know, and you mentioned the retail industry is one competitor for talent. And I think in light of, you know, our recent experience coming out of, you know, I'll say the early portion of this pandemic, we're finding that competitors for talent are much broader than just retail. We may be competing with, for example, Amazon, as they introduce distribution centers across the nation that are often located not too far from some of our restaurants. And Amazon is a, you know, high payer, and that certainly puts a lot of pressure on our talent as far as retention and attraction is concerned. So appreciate all those points you brought up.
That's actually a really good point. I wanted to speak on that really quick. Historically, manufacturing and distribution have kind of been in their own bubble. And there's very little overlap, even within the company. Like, you could have companies that have storefronts and distribution centers, and there's not that too much movement back and forth. And I think it's usually a specific type of employee or worker that desires to work in more of that manufacturing space than necessarily the food or retail or product space. But again, now that obviously our entire labor model has been turned upside down, we are now having challenges where manufacturing has historically paid higher than food, similar to retail. We're now having challenges of losing our, you know, frontline customer facing employees to manufacturing, which has just not typically been, you know, a competitor. So again, additional challenges. And then with the introduction of e-commerce, it opens up a whole world of doors, because jobs that didn't used to exist before, right, now not only exist, but they're growing at a significant rate. So I think that was a really good point, Jess.
Excellent. Well, appreciate the additional commentary. So a question that often comes up from our members has to do with just how many survey sources with compensation data should, you know, somebody in the HR team, or, you know, somebody that might be responsible for conducting some of this analysis, be using?
Mm-hmm. So the sweet spot is 2, sometimes 3. I would recommend 3 sources in cases where you have data and they're wildly different, or it's highly specialized and you really are motivated to get it right. But typically 2 is what I'd recommend. As I mentioned earlier, the challenge with, you know, in-store or in-restaurant workers is that there's just not other sources. So you could potentially supplement your restaurant sources with maybe a retail source. That's an option as well. But there's just not the general industry surveys that you would have for, say, again, your accounting, your IT, your HR roles, which you typically have plenty of sources to refer to. There are plenty of surveys, both private and more like public, like Mercer, Aon, Towers, where you could get that data from. But again, when you get to those more specialized jobs that are maybe restaurant specific, so they could be in your support center, but are, say, food focused, right? If they're just not going to appear in those other surveys, Searcher is your go-to source. So where at all possible, you would use 2 sources, 3 if you really need to, because the data is a little off. But unfortunately, in a lot of our cases, and the majority of our employees, we're just not going to have the benefit of having those multiple surveys.
Excellent. Super helpful. Super helpful. I would have to concur with the commentary around 2 to 3 sources. And one of the, you know, earlier sources that I used when I was first entering into the restaurant industry or different websites like salary.com. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on websites like that or similar types of products?
Yep. So that's actually a really, really good question. And salary.com has 2 interfaces. So it's kind of an end user interface. So just the person that's going on looking for, they're typing in salary and they're getting some number, right? And then there's the paid member compensation interface, which I think has more reliable data, has all the surveys, cuts and sources that you could possibly want, and it's a little bit more up there in the reputable space. However, the way in which they go about collecting their data and aging and updating their data is not necessarily as ideal, right, as a data with a hard specific published date. So when it comes to organizing the credibility or reliability of the data, I would go for paid published survey sources first, then the paid salary.com comp analyst membership version. And then if you're just super desperate, Indeed postings, whatever it is, in this day and age, we're kind of like scrambling to get whatever we can. But that's kind of how I would order it. I mean, the reason why is just the regulations and how the third parties go about collecting the data, scrubbing the data, the amount of work that goes behind ensuring that any questions are responded to, any anomalies are removed, is just more thorough in those published survey data that have a specific published date versus salary.com, which is kind of like an ongoing aging process and data is just added along the way.
Excellent. One of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is in terms of the number of survey participants. And so that tends to be pretty stable, I think, over time for you know, organizations like Aon that help to publish this information. I'm curious if, you know, here due to recent events, seeing some of that participation change for, frankly, unfortunate reasons, some, you know, brands haven't been able to survive. Is there any concern there?
Well, I mean, there's always concern when it comes to a significant reduction in participant data. There's, two primary reasons as to why. One, once the data drops below five organizations, right, it's no longer reportable for meaningful purposes, right? So they could maybe report the median and the average, but you're not getting the full statistics. And again, you know, depending on the size of those reporting, it's just not maybe the best representation of what's going on in that specific location. The other reason is that it's comparability, right? So when you're comparing survey or compensation information year over year, you want to see that stability so that you can see that truly what you're seeing is a change in the labor cost and not a change in participants, right? So if you had 10 participants that are participating 1 year, then you have six, but of those six, three didn't even participate in the previous year. You really only have three continuing participants. So that's going to significantly change your data. But to the outside eye, it looks like pay has significantly spiked or significantly dipped, right? Then you're led to make a decision. Am I going to use this data or am I just going to age forward the old data that I have? Because I'm not confident that this is a good representation of what's going on. And unfortunately, that's just kind of been the case as organizations are struggling, and specifically in the restaurant industry, you know, lots of companies are going under or they're merging or they're, you know, reducing hours or there's a lot of creative strategies, right, in order to keep the doors open. This has been a challenge for us, but I think at Certra, we have taken kind of that extra step to really reach out and ensure that these companies are continuing to participate. Because again, we're all helping each other, right? We're all going through the same challenges. And so how do we as an organization ensure that our members are getting the best benefit of our survey?
I'm so glad you touched on that. And, you know, not to add to our shameless plug here, but I think as a, you know, current professional in HR dealing with, you know, compensation decisions on what feels like a daily basis at times, I can tell you it's been so valuable to have, you know, the survey data to, you know, help influence some of those decisions. And, you know, for any of the folks that are listening on the podcast, this is just a great resource. And if you haven't participated in the past, this is you know, the time is now, so to speak. We would love to not only be able to benefit from it, but for you to benefit from it as well. You know, talked about some of the changes in the data. One thing that I think a lot of folks new to compensation, you know, ask about is compression, and you know, they're not really sure what it means. Would you do us a wonderful favor and just talk us through what it is and how do you deal with it?
Oh boy. So the last few years, like I said, I'm pretty sure there are many people listening to this podcast who have been in the industry for years and they will probably echo what I'm saying. But the past few years, again, has been unprecedented because of the amount of minimum wage legislations that have gone into effect and the significant amount that they have increased since 2015. In some years, for example, you're having minimum wage increased by $2+ in 1 year, right? And so what happens is now everyone that who was at the bottom from a compensation perspective is now moving up. Well, what does that mean for all the layers above that person? So for example, if you have a team member or a crew member who is making $12 an hour and the minimum wage legislation goes into effect, increasing them to $13.50. Now, all of those existing employees who are below $13.50 need to be brought up. Now there's two forms of compression I want to talk about. One is intra-job, right? So you had seasoned, dependable, reliable, I would call them core employees who were making, let's just say 13, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Now, yeah. All of the people, the teenagers that just started yesterday are all making the same as these core individuals who as a store or as a restaurant, you cannot afford to lose. What are we doing there? Like, what are we doing for that compression within the job? So intra-job. Then there's the inter-job. So now there's usually hourly managers of some kind at restaurants or stores, and their pay is usually $2 to $3 above the average pay for a crew member. Well, if we're increasing the crew member's pay by half that, now you have this elevated role, which from a value perspective, right, has not changed, right? This hourly manager is still performing the same job and same duties, but now it's less lucrative for this person to take on that extra responsibility and do that extra work because they're now making something similar to someone who just started. So that is like the second portion of, or the inter-job compression, and it's been causing lots of issues. Something that I've been looking at my past couple of companies is just the job gaps. Which should they be, right? What are they? And that question has become more and more gray, specifically in the pandemic. So if we look at, let's say, a typical quick service or quick casual model. We have a crew member. We'll have an hourly manager or a shift manager, right? You may or may not have an assistant manager, and you have your general manager or your store manager or your restaurant manager, whatever you want to call it. And before, it was a pretty consistent pay gap between them. But what's happened is, obviously, as minimum wage is forced the bottom up, we're starting to see some of those pay gaps shrink, right? But then, as we're also seeing what I call the desperation of the pandemic, and we're now increasing wages of above and beyond minimum wage by $2 and $3 just to get people in the door, you're now starting to see issues not only with that shift manager or that shift supervisor level, but also with your salaried managers, which is a huge problem because, as we all know, the key to success for any restaurant starts with the general manager, right? And so losing those seasoned individuals, losing those people with that experience who are driving the culture of those successful restaurants, it has cataclysmic outcomes. And so it's extremely important to, that's where our data comes in again. So it's like, okay, we don't necessarily have the answers today, right? So it's like, okay, this is what we were doing before. If we increase everyone at the same rate, we can afford it. So what is a balance? What are other people doing, right? What are those gaps looking like? Are we still competitive? Asking the right questions and then seeking the data and looking into the data to get the answers is really the only way that I think you can make a smart, educated, and planned decision versus just one-off pay increases that will now create inequity across either the restaurant or store itself or across different restaurants and stores, which has been a problem as well.
Yeah, compression is real, and it's getting more and more challenging, I feel, as the days go on and the competition for talent is fierce. So really appreciate you explaining that. Super helpful. So when you think about, all the challenges we talked about earlier, one of them, specifically has to do with just different job categories. And you referred to sort of in restaurant operations jobs, and you talked about corporate jobs. And, I know there are certain brands, and I can speak for, my organization, that do some of their own, you know, logistics and have warehouses and transportation, which is sort of its own, you know, bucket outside of the corporate and operations world. So, you know, how does, you know, somebody in, you know, the HR field manage all those different categories? And, you know, if the Aon data has information on some of those corporate positions, is that sufficient to inform pay decisions?
Yep, that's a really good question. So, you know, typically in the organization has an overall philosophy on comp strategy, but it's just not just one compensation strategy. It's an overarching philosophy. As you start to layer down in the organization, your compensation strategy changes based on the types of jobs. So something that's really, really popular, right, is IT. Right. Separating out IT from all the other corporate positions who may have one compensation philosophy because of the environment. Right. It's especially now that restaurants are starting to become really advanced or trying to become really advanced in technology, which has not historically been the case. These IT jobs that we weren't even considering are now like hot commodities. And so, hey, with our current philosophy, we're just not competitive. We need to pull these guys out and we need to look at a different market position. We need to look at more specialized survey sources so that we can get the best candidates for these jobs. That's the way we need to look at it for the entire organization. So when you look at your organization's, I would say, heartbeat. Who are you, right? What do you pride yourself in? So we are, let's just say in your situation, we have the top distribution services. Other companies look to us to distribute their products. Let's just say that that was the situation. So you would want to be extremely competitive when it comes to pay for your distribution. So that is where you would focus. You would pull as many sources as you possibly can. You would target maybe the 75th percentile, maybe saying that there's only 25% of companies out there that's going to pay more than what we're going to pay, or potentially higher, because you have committed that in order for you to be successful as an organization, this is the area in which we need to get top talent, where maybe your support center positions, you don't necessarily need to compete in that way. And you are okay with being in the middle of the pack. So you would target your 50% percentile. So it's like it's coming up with what are the parts of the organization that we really need to focus on, and do we need a different strategy? And that strategy would then lead you to your survey sources, to your survey or your market percentile, your market position. So that's 25th, 50th, 75th, 90th percentile. And that is where you would focus your strategy for those specific parts of the organization. And it's not uncommon. And again, when we start to look at different types of jobs, like restaurants, you can't even get those jobs in the same survey sources, right? So certain survey sources are better for certain jobs. Your Aons, your Mercers, your Towers, they're really, really strong for those corporate jobs that you can find in most industries. They are not strong when it comes to those specialized jobs that you only find in certain industries. And in those cases, you need specialized survey sources. And for a restaurant, that's Sirtra.
Excellent. Wonderful. I think what I'm hearing as a consistent theme throughout all of your commentary is, you know, just the wisdom around being curious. And, you know, if you're in a situation where your company is asking you for, you know, insight and recommendations on pay, that as a, you know, HR professional in this space, the most important thing to do before you start to analyze the data is to answer some key questions around how the organization thinks about itself strategically, what's most important, and then tie those priorities to the jobs, and then understand how those jobs would look and be affected by pay. Am I hearing you?
Jess, I couldn't have summarized it any better, honestly. And I this is a personal point of pain for me, is the worst thing that you can do is go to your restaurant or your retail leadership with numbers and cost. you have to get a strategic commitment first. And the reason for that is we all understand the impacts of bottom line. When the shareholders say jump, we say how high, you know, and again, that's why we're in the business of doing business. However, what you don't want to do is make decisions based on the numbers absent of your vision or your strategic commitment. And if you don't have a vision or strategic commitment from your leadership, it is very easy to look and say, oh, where can we cut? And like I said, if there's no commitment, then there's no promise. And therefore, you're going to find yourself in a similar situation or worse than when you started. So getting that strategy, getting that market position, getting that commitment of the identity and what we want for ourselves in the future is crucial prior to you doing the research and coming with the numbers, because the numbers are going to give pause. And then all of a sudden there's hemming and hawing and we don't really need to do this. Well, what if we just cut in this corner and cut in this corner? Now you have this haphazard strategy, right, that will fall to pieces once there's another change.
Couldn't agree more. Speaking from personal experience, I know early on in my own career, I started with the data and then I started asking questions after the data. And I found myself in a bit of a challenging situation where, you know, my recommendations were clearly half-baked because I hadn't asked those questions up front. So I think that's just a great, you know, parting, you know, piece of advice for our listeners to come away with is, you know, really the importance of using inquiry to help influence change. As we all know, we have to wear a lot of hats in our roles. And for those who have some more experience, they probably appreciate how asking questions is a great way to influence decisions. And one of the questions that folks who are listening can ask is, you know, why do we need to know what our competitors are making? And really let your customers, let your business partners give you the answer that leads them to the outcome you're looking for, which is we've got to get this data. This data is so important and we should participate in it as well, because it's going to make it that much richer and more relevant for our decisions.
Exactly. It's going to make it that much better. Like I said, if we're all working together and we're all providing the data, we get just so much more benefit out of it. Right. There was one thing I wanted to say around that learning concept. I majored in math statistics. Anyone who knows about math, it's very concrete. You know, your ones and your zeros, you have one answer usually, right? Sometimes you have more than one, but it's very straightforward. The definitions are very outlined. Compensation is not that way, right? It's an art based in science. So we get the data, we have the data, but then we start to craft it and we start to build it into the story of who our organization is. And there's not one answer for every organization. So being okay with living in the gray area, it took me some time. It took me my entire consulting career to be okay with saying, I don't know, being okay with asking questions and trying to figure out solutions. Because as I said, since I've been in the retail space for the last few years, it has literally changed every year. And there's not been one year where I've been able to rinse and repeat. There's always a new challenge. There's always a new struggle. There's always something that's different than it was before. And it's very unsettling. But just being okay with not having the answers and just going out and trying to find out the answers or trying to find the resources that are going to help you. And again, it's not just you, right? We as compensation or total rewards professionals, we are at service of our organization. So talking to your business partners, talking to your ops leaders, just getting a really good understanding of what's going on. The business acumen, I would say, is the top skill set that is needed to be successful today. You have to know what's going on in your stores and restaurants, in your distribution centers and manufacturing centers. You have to know what's going on outside of them in order to make the best informed decisions, because the data, you know, legally has to be aged at least 3 months, right? And the data has been collected prior to that. So, you know, in many cases, your data is 4 to 6 months old at best. And we know that during the pandemic, unfortunately, that where before that was okay, right? During the pandemic, things are changing from month to month. And so it's like just being understanding that you're always going to have to get that anecdotal data from the ground to inform real-time decisions. Like I said, your survey data, your sources are your science, right? That help to support, but at the end of the day, what's going on the ground, right, is what is ultimately going to drive the final decisions. And if you're closed-minded and you're in your office and you're typing and you're making your decisions on your own, you're going to find yourself in a worse position than you were when you started.
Wow, great advice. Couldn't agree more. I think, you know, one of the quick lessons I learned early on in that initial experience I had in sort of trying to help inform compensation decisions is make sure you know the data you already have access to, starting with payroll. What is your payroll cost? What percentage of your total expenses as a company is attributed to payroll? And I think, you know, it's pretty safe bet that most companies right now are, you know, paying a lot of attention to that percentage. No matter what it is, it's more than likely going up. And so that means it's taking away from the profits for today and potentially for the future. So for anybody that's on this call, I think there's a real key data point that you can start with if you don't already, you know, participate in the Aon survey for CERTRA. And if you feel like you might face some resistance in, you know, your company being willing to pay for access to the data, there's a real strong case to be made that this could be a wonderful investment to really mitigate some of that risk and exposure given the dynamic environment we're in.
Can agree more.
Excellent. Well, Asia, I could talk for hours on this topic, as I'm sure you could as well. I think hopefully the discussion that we had this podcast is of value to our members and our prospective members. I have no doubt that, you know, each person who listens to the podcast is going to come away with some key learnings, and I really appreciate your time today. And, you know, also want to, you know, thank CERTRA for giving us an opportunity to talk with you, and, you know, looking forward to seeing our members bring questions to our team around the data, because they're not only, you know, benefiting from it, but also looking to help one another with their experience using that data. So thank you for that. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up. And for those listening, if you have a podcast suggestion, feel free to send an email to the following email address, office@crtraweb.org, with any suggestions. And we hope you'll tune in next time. Please subscribe so you won't miss any of the great information on our podcast. And you can subscribe at the CERTRA website. We'd love your comments and feedback. And remember, today is all about getting better, progress over perfection. So if you had any technical issues while you were listening, we appreciate your patience and understanding. Have a wonderful day.